call the Customer Service and Operations Committee meeting to order. Before you, you have the agenda. May I ask for approval of the agenda as it stands? Moved by Mr. Goldman. Is there a second? We'll take a second from anyone.
Second.
Hearing second. Thank you. All those in favor? And no one opposed.
Aye.
Thank you. The next item is the approval of amendments of May 14th. Is there a motion for approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Porter. Moves approval and a second. Yes, and thank you, Ms. Hope. No, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Aye. And opposed? That motion approves. We can all wake up now. Good morning. I'd like to introduce the items on the Customer Service and Operation agenda. We have two action items along with one informational update. The first two items authorize Metro to seek public input on the proposed changes to its services. The Metro bus service's state of good operations is in its sixth adjustment, which Metro will has separated out the cost of this service and made service adjustments, making them budget neutral. The second service is the Metro Rail. Staff has developed a proposal that would adjust service based on recent performance trends and ridership. And I need to emphasize that both of these items represent the beginning of the conversation in this process with our customers. I think we've already begun with our riders advisory group. Pending approval, both of these proposals will proceed through the Metro public participation process, and the board will be asked to approve following that. The board approved the PPP just under a year ago, and it provides a comprehensive approach to reaching out to solicit input. I look forward to hearing our customers' thoughts and collected through the PPE process and using that input into the help guide of the board's decision making. We have actually two adjustments that we're going to go through in the next item, and that is the one on the new electronic payment program. We have just completed its pilot phase, and now we are into the point in which we will be looking at the opportunity, how we will evaluate the results of the pilot planning and the next steps. And there is an executive session for the discussion as we go forward here. Those questions that are less appropriate in the public will be discussed in the executive session. With that, I will start with the bus service item. Thank you, Ms. Andrick.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am here to, we'll move on to the next slide. I'm here this morning to talk about the requesting approval for proceeding with our state of good operations bus service adjustments. This will be the sixth year that we've done this, and included in the package is the discussion proposing the elimination of the 5A Dulles Airport bus service, as well as a couple of fare proposals relating to bus services. Next slide. These bus service adjustment proposals are developed over a period of time from a number of sources, including a review of our criteria. Go ahead, and I think we have active. Well, we'll let the animation work, and I believe you have the actual presentation. Some review of our performance criteria, which is done on an annual basis, as well as reviewing performance statistics throughout the year. We also have customer input, jurisdictional review, and have done a number of studies, corridor studies and service evaluations, leading to a host of recommendations that we seek opportunities to input. Through the public hearing process, we gain public input, and I want to emphasize that we have, through the years, taken to heart that input, and we have made adjustments, so people should anticipate that the proposal to the board in the fall recommending implementation often looks different than the proposal does going out at this point in the public hearing. That final report to the board will document in detail all of the recommendations, and then the implementation takes place over the next 6 to 9 months, depending on the availability of funding and the coordination with the work picking opportunities and adjustments if needed by other service providers. Our next slide there, as I mentioned, this is actually the sixth time that we've done this. It surprised us that it seemed like it hasn't been that long, but it turns out that the first time was 2010, and we've made this an annual effort each fall to go out, and outside of the context of meeting a budget target, have conversations about the priorities of what we should be doing, where our services are performing well or exceedingly well and they need additional resource, and where they're not performing as well as they could or should, and how we make those adjustments of resource to meet the priority needs of the region. This process will reflect the public participation plan that was approved by the board. So it's important to understand that though there is only one official public hearing, there are opportunities for many public meetings and a lot of opportunity for public input. Folks often get a little concerned when they hear there's only one hearing, but we will be making an effort and we'll turn down no opportunities to go talk to customers. So if anybody wants to host a meeting, a civic association, a jurisdiction, we're happy to go and to make ourselves available, in addition to all of the other outreach that goes with that, to gather customer feedback, all of which is intended to comply with the WMATA compact requirements, as well as the Title VI and the board's instruction to fully engage our customers and the public in our decision processes. So in summary, the hearing proposals include 30 adjustments in the district, 24 in Maryland, and 27 in Virginia, as well as the proposal for the 5A Dulles route. Additionally, we're looking for opportunities for partnering with rail to find more efficient and effective ways of delivering service, one of which is the continuing dialogue about how much bus service do we need between Wheaton and Silver Spring. When you have the Q line and the Y line, sometimes you have more capacity than you actually need, but how do you get folks from Veers Mill to Silver Spring, which is their destination, without running the bus all the way through and being subject to the congestion, especially around the Beltway? So one proposal that we'd like to consider is offering a free transfer to use the railroad down to Silver Spring, where the Red Line still has capacity on the cars, and allow folks to more quickly get to Silver Spring to make transfers or to their work or recreation site. There was a proposal made last spring at the public hearing here in the building by a gentleman to create a virtual bus transfer between Capitol Heights and Addison Road. He pointed out that there's a lot of bus services that go to Capitol Heights. There's a lot of bus service at Addison Road. There's only one bus route that goes between the two. If he could just jump on a train and get out to Addison Road, then he'd have full access to more services within Prince George's. And we thought that actually made a lot of sense, similar in concept to what we were talking about at Wheaton. But it really helps tie together those two important nodes with a much more frequent point of access. So, and then lastly is the proposal for the transit link card that needs some clarification for the fair tariff to show how we're implementing it. The anticipated results, as always, are really focused on improved reliability and customer service. We're trying to address those low-performing, where we're occurring congestion, where we're not meeting our on-time, but also addressing the crowding issues. As we improve our services, every time without fail, we're seeing increased ridership and cost efficiencies. Being able to keep the bus moving is always a better option than letting it grind to a halt in congestion. And it's essential to understand the concept of state of good operations, because we see an increase in traffic congestion in the region by about 1% each year. So even to maintain a steady state, we have to continually invest in running time adjustments in order to provide for reliability and on-time performance. Cost recovery for transit link fare card media, I think there was lots of conversation about that, and it's very attractive for the riders, particularly the folks from Frederick were mentioning that at the last round of public hearings. And it's all within the concept of the efficient use of resources. We're trying to balance the needs within the resources available and within the budget. So none of these proposals will make a change in the fiscal 16 budget. And so in conclusion, the recommendation is that the board approve a public hearing, including the state of good operations changes, the Dulles adjustment, and the fair proposals that have been described. And then we'll conduct all the public participation plan activities and report back. And last, I'll leave with the next steps. The complete docket will have all of the details. That's where we do the maps. That's where we do the detailed descriptions. What you have is in the resolution is just a summary table of those changes. And all of that will be used to inform the public through the PPP. September timeframe, I think September 15, is the target date for the public hearing. And then we'll present the public hearing report in October, which is in plenty of time for us to be able to make changes in December, for which there is clear direction, and then follow up in March and the succeeding June.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's start by putting a motion on the floor. Is there a motion to move to the public? Moved by Mr. Downey, second? Second by Ms. Hines. Any discussion or questions regarding the presentation? Mr. Downey.
Just at what point in the process is the Title VI review done?
Well, we do a preliminary review to start with, so we've got all of the data together about each of the individual proposals. But because Title VI is sort of a network analysis, we sort of have to wait until the final package is put together to do the final memo, which then gets sent to the board. So that would be in September with the presentation of the final recommendations. We would have that in draft form. And then depending on the final tweaks that happen inevitably during the board review, then the memo would be finalized.
Thank you. Ms. Porter.
Just a comment. You noted that we had gotten a recommendation for this Addison Road Capitol Heights link. I hope this sort of encourages us to continue to think of the way we operate in terms of customer trips. I know we look at it, we have certain lines, we have certain rail lines, certain bus lines, that's the way we operate. But in terms of the way people use it, they think of it as a trip. They think of it, I start at home, I end up at my work, or I start at, you know, my work, I end up at lunch, or whatever they're using it for. And so to the extent that we can think of it that way in terms of trips and facilitate those kinds of things, I think we will see people more inclined to use it. So I really, I commend your looking at both of these things as ways of conceptualizing from a customer's point of view. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Hines.
Thanks. I have a couple of really kind of how are we doing this questions as opposed to, I mean, conceptually, I think we've been making great progress in doing this, and kudos to your staff, Mr. Requa and Mr. Hamry, for all of this work. In the next step slide, it says hold public hearing. That sounds like one public hearing to me. I will tell you that when I look at the changes that potentially affect Arlington, I think there are a lot, unless we find a different way to describe what's going on, which will be my second point. But is your intention to hold a single public hearing or to hold hearings in the jurisdictions?
Well, I'll be honest, I'm still wrapping my head around how PPP works, but the technical compact required public hearing, the intent is that there would be one. It would be here on the 15th. But we would have a number of public meetings at which people could come and provide comments and input into the recommendations. And so as the schedule of outreach gets prepared, we would look for opportunities. And I think I concur with your point. It's important to go to where folks who use the services are and have access to be able to have that conversation.
So my second observation is that while we all wish it weren't so, August is dead time around here. Everybody leaves. And so if we're going to have a bunch of community meetings in early September, we really have to get on the ball now to get those on people's calendars. And, I think September 15th may be a very aggressive time frame because Labor Day is September 7th this year, so that really gives us 8 days after people kind of get back in the I'm at work mode and I'm not on vacation anymore. So I don't know whether there should be a little wiggle in that or not, or whether you've got more room, but I just raise those both as serious issues that we in local government deal with all the time.
We want to honor the process.
Right.
The one good thing is that many of the schools begin in August, so people will be
not in Virginia,
back and
Jim.
Present.
Not
and
in
so,
Virginia.
I understand, but that'll be a start. And also, last year, we actually ended up having meetings after the formal public hearing as part of a continuous month of dialogue.
And I think that's great, just so long as people don't, as we message it, as there'll be local times, and if you really want to come and say something for the formal record as opposed to the feed-in information, this is when you have to do it. The other thing I would just ask is whether or not there will be time between now and when the board votes in July for local staffs to work with you on the description that's in the docket of the route change. And I'll give an example. In several cases in changes that affect Arlington, it's been noted that we plan to pick the route up with ART. But that's not true in every case. And we would like it to say that so that people don't become alarmed and think they got to come and lobby for service that we plan to continue providing just with a different colored bus. So is that something that we can have a little leeway on here between now and when the board votes?
Well, certainly. We've had this material distributed for some time, and we're happy to continue to refine that. It may need to take the form of a amendment on the floor to correct the language once the committee has forwarded this resolution, and that's something that we have done in the past.
Great. So we all know we can do it, and we can roll it all up into perhaps one large amendment that reflects what the jurisdictions want it to say if there are other adjustments. I know we have some. So thank you.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, all those in favor that we move forward?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Ambry. And I do think that the number of individual meetings will make help in trying to keep to the other part of the docket and get all the information. The next item is also an information item, and it is on rail service adjustments. And this item is going to be presented by Mr.
Can I just make a comment first?
Yes,
Madam Chairman, I just want to, I think we think that the bus service adjustments over the years have been very worthwhile. We get a lot of public input. As Mr. Hamry says, we put out 6 or 7 pages of changes and come back with the 1 or 2 pages of actual changes in the end after the entire process, which has turned out to be fruitful from the beginning. With the initiation of Silver Line service, I think staff has taken a look at the rail service and found that, you know, there is potentials for making the service more reliable. I felt that this is a good time to come before the committee to talk about that, not in the budget process, but as an opportunity to just talk about rail service reliability and potential things that could be changed. And again, to with approval, we would then like to speak to the public about this at the same time. So this is a first time for rail to come forward with a discussion with the committee in regards to potential changes. And you know, we hope that it has the same impacts that we've been getting out of the bus service. So with that, I think turn it over to Mr. Hughes and Rob for their discussion.
Thank you.
As Jack mentioned, we've been looking at our service since we sort of changed all the service a year ago and we started the Silver Line. And we looked at a number of things. We've looked at our overall ridership. We've looked at our overall service performance. As the year has gone by, we've seen some areas for improvements. We've seen some stuff that we've made some improvements on, but we're not where we want to be. So we've been working on an option, and I'd like to present that option today to get your reaction to it, tell you where we are, and then potentially move it forward and get public reaction. Go to the first slide, if you would, John. It's been a year since we've been operating the service. We've made some changes about how we deal with things on the line in the ROCC, trying to get all of our service where we want it to be. But we found that our service reliability isn't where we would like it to be. We reported to you that on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis. I'll show you some facts. We've got a very complex operation out there. Five of our lines intertwine with one another, everything but the red line. Red line kind of is by itself. But everything else interacts with one another. So if there's a problem at the National Airport on a yellow line, we now have problems on the yellow and the green line, we have problems on the blue line. We have problems that transfer to the orange and silver line as all the lines merge. So we see an issue, daily issue. It takes us a while to recover. We also see, I'll go through a little bit more detail how we plan on resolving that, or we hope to resolve that. We also have seen a ridership decline. As we've reported, we've seen an 8% ridership decline over the last 5 years. It's a little more than 1% a year. It's not a lot when you deal with 1%, but there's a ridership decline. So we're looking at our trains in the peak are not as crowded as they used to be. Is there a way that we can match what's going on with the ridership, what we're doing with our service, and try to match better our performance, get better at consistent, reliable service with what's going on with the ridership? We've also heard, and you'll see through this from our Blue Line experience that we've seen over the past few years as we've done the Rush Bus and as we've done the Silver Line. Okay, next slide. This is a slide that shows our performance. And this is actually directly from our vital sign that we sent you last month. And as you can see, in the middle of the slide is, can't see real well on the screen, I apologize for that. But beginning since we've tried to merge everything together and add the service sets out there, our reliability hasn't been where we would like it to be. Our goal was 91%. We're averaging 88, 89%. Over those months, if you ignore the winter months where we have weather problems, we've had some issues. We've done things with the Rail Operating Committee where we are trying to get trains to merge better at Roslyn. We're doing things where we're better, and we've done some improvements to that. But we're getting to the point where those little things have still not achieved our goal. We schedule as much service as we thought reliably could through fit all of our downtown areas. We're scheduling 26 trains an hour between Roslyn and Stadium Armory and the Orange Blue Silver Line. We're getting on average 24 and a half trains an hour through there. It's 1.5 less an hour than we schedule. It's not a lot, but on a daily basis, what that does is starts creating overcrowding on the trains that we have left. So once we have that problem, as I mentioned potentially at the airport, now the trains are backing up. Now the train that's the first, there's a 3-minute gap in front of it. That train in front of it gets to Roslyn. It's either waiting for an Orange Line train or a Blue Line train to come through. That train gets more crowded. It gets in the downtown area. we now have a dwell time problem on the train, people getting on and off the train, and it's just like a traffic jam. It's backing up, and all of a sudden you're at a state level F on a traffic level, and it's hard to get traffic through. And there's not a lot of room for us to catch up in terms of what we can do to get the trains reliably through. So we've been working on a plan that will get us, that will give us an option, and maybe will get us to be more consistent, more reliable. Next slide, please. We hope this explains it again. I won't go through it all, but I'll tell you the outline of our plan. I'm sorry, I'm going to use the orange silver line because those are the lines I ride. Wheely Avenue, we run a train every we schedule a train every 6 minutes. We schedule a train every 6 minutes out of Vienna. Those trains come together, they merge at East Falls Church. So then when they get to East Falls Church, they're scheduled to arrive 4 minutes, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes. Sorry, I'm trying to keep it simple though. Then those two trains get down to Roslyn, and now we've got the blue line coming in. The blue line runs every 12 minutes. So from Stadium Armory, we're now running 2 minute, 2 minute, 2 minute, 4 minute, 2 minute, 2 minute, 2 minute, 4 minute, throughout the hour. That's what we're trying to do. And it's those 2 minute gaps, and that schedule is now 26 trains getting through there, scheduled through there, and that's where we're only getting 24 and a half. So we're missing every hour, we're missing an hour and a half train on. And it doesn't include when there's an offload or something else and it backs up even longer. And that's true on all of our lines. So as we do the, from Franconia Springfield and Huntington, they all start at 6 minutes, they merge. And it's true on the Green Line. So I won't go through that. That's what the chart shows. So we're trying to get a more consistent pattern that we can provide to our customers that also will provide a more consistent basis. What we're proposing is instead of 6 minutes at each terminal, it's now 8 minutes. So those trains out of Wheely and those trains out of Vienna will come together and there will be a 4 minute headway. When we get to the blue line, which will be increased to an 8 minute headway, it becomes a then 422, 422. And over the course of an hour, we will be scheduling 23 trips an hour through there. So the plan would have less trips going through the downtown area and would be, we believe, more consistent, more reliable, because we've got the ability to have a little wiggle room in terms of there's a one-minute problem somewhere, which we don't have today. And that's throughout the system. We are increasing the headway on the blue line from 12 minutes to 8 minutes, so it's consistent with the rest of the lines. And the yellow rough push service between Franconia Springfield and Greenbelt will disappear. We've got other services that we're running on the blue line, and it handles the loads that are on the green line, which I'll go through. What does this new option give us? There's a lot of impacts. Thank you, John. We believe we've got a chance for a better, more consistent on-time performance, more consistency in what we provide. What do I mean by consistency? I ride the train every day. I believe it's 35 minutes from when I go on a train to downtown. So the question is, how often do we meet that 35 minutes? Is it 38 minutes or is it 45 minutes? And so I think from a consistency, I mean how much more can the customer rely that my trip's going to be the following? And you know, that's what I mean as opposed to, is my train going to be there at 6:15? No, but it's going to be there in a reliable fashion in terms of how I can get downtown. We think we're aligning this with what the ridership demand is. It's a slightly lower ridership, so it is less service. It's consistent and reliable, Pastor M said that, and we're balancing what we are seeing on the blue line. We are dialing back Rush Plus. We are creating less trains. Trains that are less will be more crowded. You know, there will be consistently more people on trains. I'll show you some numbers in a moment. And there will be wider headways, which means when I go to the train in the morning, if instead of a six-minute headway and I'm averaging a three-minute wait, there'll be an eight-minute headway and I'm going to average the four-minute wait. There will be more waits in the outer lines, you know, a minute. On the inner lines, you may not notice it. Versus 26 trains an hour versus 23 trains an hour, the wait never is that long. But it will be a longer wait. What will the customer experience be? As you know, we've got standards in terms of passenger loads, and it's how many passengers are on trains as they're entering the downtown area. The left side of the chart shows what the current number of cars that we provide through the maximum load point as it's coming downtown, and how many passengers are in those cars. And this is, again, same information that we've given out in vital signs. And as you can see, currently, we're somewhere between the 70s and up to 100. The goal that we stated is we want to be somewhere between 80 and 120. Our goal is about 100. That's what we've worked out, and you've put in our guidelines. If we do the eight-minute headway and we provide the capacity we can provide, we will provide the chart on the right. The ridership counts go up per car. Carrying the same number of people with less trains going through, they're going to be more crowded. They're still within our standard. Okay. Just as a footnote on there, we've assumed that some of the riders that have shifted from the blue line to the yellow line because of the yellow rush plus are going to shift back. So there's a little bit of numbers. Yes, questions I'll answer. So that's what we think the ridership impact would be. What we're looking for, next page, thank you, is we want to move forward, get some public input into this option. It's an option. We can continue doing what we're doing today and trying to improve that and make it better. We can bring an option that says, okay, if we change the headways, try to get less service in there, we think we can provide this more consistent service. The next step would be, been here, we've been presented this to the JCC, your staff, so I've presented this to the RAC, got some comments, and some mixed reactions from them. I don't expect that today. There's pros and cons to this proposal. We would do a similar outreach that you've heard Jim mention on the bus side. We would meet with everybody that can. We would be forming public hearing. It would be customer outreach, intercepting people at train stations to get feedback from a lot of stuff we've done in the past, and there would be an official public hearing. Then we'd come back with a formal recommendation. So what we're asking for today is discussion of this proposal and agreement, move forward with the public participation plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. There's been lots of discussion before we got here, so I think we will have a lot of discussion now that we're here. And so Mr. Giancola had asked to speak, and I'll simply move down the line.
All right, thank you for the report. And while I have no objection to proceeding to a hearing, I have some questions on some of the lines or some of the charts. And just to set a context here, I have an engineering degree, a couple engineering degrees, and I'm a minor in math. And some of the numbers are not, I'm having trouble getting my head around them. So it'll be interesting to see a little more analysis on that. But if you look at chart 32 of 67, which is talking about the Metro Rail on-time performance, I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the dip we saw, the real sharp dip, was as a result of the smoking incident that we had in Roslyn. Is that why it dipped so quickly there and then came back up? I mean, clearly it's showing that our on-time performance all of a sudden got significantly less. It looks like it's January, but early February.
That's weather-related. What happens with the weather-related incidents is when we have them during the weekday, and we cut back and we widen the headway simply because we don't have the ridership to support that.
So that was
that's still
weather-related.
There's weather-related incidences in February. There are a number of those, and again, we widen the headways, and it is a negative effect. We do that intentionally, so we recognize that'll happen, and we do that intentionally when we widen the headways on that. We had a number of snow events January, February, and March.
Okay, and going to the chart 35 of 67 under customer experience, where you talk about the current requirement and the proposed 8-minute. Headway car requirement, the two options you're laying out. You're making a pretty strong assumption here that assume 30% ridership switch between yellow and blue lines under the proposed plan. I mean, where did you come up with that number, and is it really realistic, and how are we going to achieve it? I mean, if that's the goal here, I just don't understand. That's a significant assumption. The other assumption is, in your context of the write-up before the charts appeared, you talked about right now the Roslyn Tunnel is a big issue, and we're achieving 24.6 cars per hour across that, whereas the goal was 26. And so are you really expecting to – is that number going to change to 26 or more cars over through the Roslyn Tunnel? Or, how is this change impacting on – the number of cars you're going to get across the Roslyn Tunnel? Seems to me that the choke point there is one of the key issues.
And yes, it is one of the keys. All our choke points are. The new plan has would schedule 23 trains an hour through there, as opposed to 26.
So you're actually going to reduce the number of trains?
That's correct.
That's the key to...
Okay. All right. I'm having trouble with that, but that's okay. I'm sure others probably will have other comments on this. So I'm questioning the 30% ridership switch, and then now you're telling me the reduction of cars through the tunnel.
If I can, the 30%...
I don't object to the public hearing, but I think that...
You've got some
splaining to do, Lucy.
We can get you some... I can get you some backup numbers, but the 30% came about what happened on the blue line when we put in Rush Plus and we put in the silver line. So there was a shift away from it. If we go back to our old sort of the regular traffic pattern, there will be a normal shift back. So there are some numbers behind where that came from, and we can share that.
I think I agree with Mr. Giancola. This it's time for us to have the public conversation about this. So I'm really glad we've started on this road. I will say, you know, we have experienced an 11% ridership decline in Arlington since Silver opened, and most of it's been on the Blue Line stations. So I think there is some evidence that it may not be that they shift to yellow. It may be that they come back to rail. I think we have a lot of people who are doing some different things at the moment because it's just not convenient to do what they're doing. I want to go back to something Mrs. Porter said in the last one. You know, the way we've got these numbers displayed, you really got to understand how trains operate, and you have to understand six-car trains versus eight-car trains and all of that. And going back to something you said, Mr. Hughes, what people want to know is what's the reliability, and when I get to the station, how long am I likely to wait? And let me just say that I think one of the things we ought to do is translate this into cars per hour through my station, as opposed to headways, to talk about, you know, if I go to the Roslyn station right now, I know that I can get on orange, blue, or silver and get downtown. I don't even think about it. There are 24 and a half trains an hour coming right now. And I would also say, as someone who rides those lines pretty regularly, it's rare for us to pull into Roslyn without having to wait outside the station at rush. That's just, I think we all of us who ride those cars, we just expect that. So it would be nice to have that reliability added. But I think you need to translate this into terms that ordinary people can understand. 8-minute headways is about seven trains an hour. For the people who've had 6-minute headways, they're going from 10 to 7. But when you actually look at how many minutes that is, it's really not too terrible. So I think we got to put this in the rider terms, in the here's what you'll experience at this station, and here's what you're likely to experience in the merges. I think there's another thing to talk about too, which is this a temporary thing? Tony touched on this a little bit. I've heard people say we won't be able to do this for more than 4 or 5 years, because once Silver gets all the way to Dulles, the whole game changes again because of the longer distance. I think we need to be clear with people about that as well, that this is a temporary. And then the last thing I would say, and really for our edification, is does automatic train control change this? If we get back to ATC, can we actually achieve what's been stated as what the system could do, 26 trains an hour through that Roslyn tunnel, for as long as I can remember? So what happens with ATC?
In regards to the ATC, it'll help. It's not right now. It would not be a significant fix. If we were to implement ATO, automatic train operation, right now, it would not fix the reliability issues, because, again, you know, what we're seeing is you know, the issues with a car offload, the merge point itself. ATO doesn't actually regulate the merge point itself, so you know that merge point, you know, you still have to hold trains again. And as Jim pointed out, you know, when we have an offload and we can't make up that gap, and we're stacking trains against, you get one train that's completely packed that goes through, and then the next train is coming through a minute later, and, you know, it's empty. I mean, you see on your chart that you've been provided, sometimes we get, you know, as many as 29 trains an hour through there, but it's one train after the other, which is not good for the passenger, just because we're trying to get those headways rationalized through there. So right now, ATO is not, it would be helpful, but it would not initially fix this. And again, back to your point, we do assume this to be a temporary issue as we start to, we get 728 rail cars, the 7Ks, which we absolutely anticipate to be more reliable as we do the fixes through the system. This cumulative effect of, you know, what we have now, you know, is what is difficult to manage against. We're right on the edge of our practical capacity. You have theoretical capacity and practical capacity. You know, we're right on the edge of the practical capacity. Any little thing turns it out. One or two things we can handle. Three or four things, you know, is difficult. So it is, we recognize with Dulles Phase 2, where we're going with that. Economic growth in the region, we anticipate that to be significant when you see the amount of cranes that we have up through here. So we anticipate going back probably in 19 or 20.
Well, I think as you tee this up, and it's already being teed up in the papers this way as reliability versus crowding, and I think we have to have some good explanations about why we think reliability better serves the region. But if the public hearings come out the other way, we have to be willing to deal with that too. I'm anxious for the conversation. Thank you.
Mr. Conklin, Mr. Daly.
Jim, thank you for the good presentation. I also agree with Tony and Mary that the time for public hearings is correct. There is a concern. I'd like to know what other options there are. And maybe I'm not smart enough to understand all of the spacing, but there is a concern. I'm a rider of Silver and Orange lines as well. Took the Orange line down this morning, and here in July, it was very crowded when I got on in West Falls. You're looking at a 20% additional crowding on each car during rush hour on that Orange line, and I would contend that it's hardly possible to put 20% more on there on that. Is there, what are the options? Can we add more cars per train on that? Because I just don't see that as being sustainable.
As we move forward with the improvements to the Orange line, the orange-blue lines, right now we're at capacity for 50% trains, 50% eight-car trains through there. So as we add capacity for that, there's a possibility that we could start adding more cars, putting on some more eight-car trains for that. And a lot of options were looked at. This is what we feel is the best option. I mean, there's, you know, and I'm sure, you know, Ms. Hines is going to faint when she hears this, but one of the things is for skip-stopping Roslyn, for the Silver Line trains to skip-stop Roslyn, to be able to get through there a lot quicker. That was one of the options that we looked at. Obviously, that's not sustainable. You know, we don't look at that as an option that we could put forward. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, like I said, as we start to widen these headways out, those are the kinds of things that we look at. Having a transfer point, cross-platform transfers, for the Silver Line trains to turn back maybe these falls and go back to be able to do the cross-platform transfers to be able to manage the traffic better. So there are other options out there, but we don't think that any of those are sustainable. The option that we're putting forward here, we think, is the best and only option other than to go back to the service plan that we're currently at.
And just as one follow-up, if in fact we do go with this plan, but we'll have a public hearing first, being here only 6 months now, I hear this will be the plan until Phase 2 of the Silver Line reopens. Not reopens, but opens. Why wait that long if we're seeing adjustments that perhaps need to be made?
Again, you know,
we're looking 5 years
out. And we'll continually evaluate this, and that's part of what we would do. We would look at our trending to understand, you know, how reliable our cars come. You know, what I'm saying is certainly by 19 we would, you know, I'm confident that we will be in a position at that point, having the new rail cars, the total fleet of new rail cars, and having completed the necessary changes that we have on the orange-blue line in regards to ATO, in regards to the power upgrades, in regards to having the cars on in service. But again, the cumulative effect of these, we'll be able to you know, take away each one of those, that we'll be able to manage that better. As we go through and we look at our on-time performance, our car reliability, how we're managing that. At any point at that time, we could come back and say, and ridership numbers too. I mean, should the ridership increase, then we'll obviously have to do something, you know, on that. Thank you, Jim. So.
One last question. Has the public been asked what is more important to them, overcrowding or on time?
That's the question. And that is the question.
That is the question.
And that is the question that Jim has presented to the JCC, that Jim has presented to the Riders Advisory Council, that we're presenting now. And that's why this is an option. You know, and I think it's important to recognize, as Chair Hudgens said, you know, this is not a recommendation for a service change. You know, this is a recommendation to have a conversation about a service option, you know, is what we want to do. So that is the question that we're moving forward.
Yes, I just wanted to note that, thank you for the presentation, but there's not any data that I see about the financial impact of this proposal and the expenses that it would incur, both in operating and maintenance. And I'm wondering in the future, in the discussion, if that can be included as well.
Absolutely.
With respect to that trade-off between on-time and crowding, the measure that you're actually putting forward is a trip reliability measure that you will get to where you're going. And my understanding is we're going to start actually measuring and reporting on that in the near future.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting you say that. I recently got a tool from our AFC group and our performance group that actually measures the trip time.
The predictability
of the trip time. You go from station to station, tap in, tap out times, and we can actually measure that any time of the day, any frequency of the day, which is great analysis for me, both from a standpoint of the consistency of the ride and also when we have issues, to be able to see what our performance was during those issues. So, yes,
if we go forward with this, we will be able to measure whether it is improving.
Absolutely. And like I said, we have the tool right now to be able to do that.
The other follow-up on Mr. Corcoran's question. Earlier discussions of this, it had been my understanding, at least maybe misunderstanding, that we might have the option to run fewer trains, which would give us more reliable performance, better handling of trains through Roslyn if they're coming on a regular cycle, but some option to put additional cars on the trains. So I just wanted to get a better understanding of why that's not feasible now. Is it a function of power upgrades? Is it a function of the performance of the fleet? What are the issues that stand in the way of, and what are the options in the future for improving?
The major obstacle right now is the power upgrades. Is the power upgrades. And again, you know, when you're looking at, you know, out on the outer lines, it, you know, wouldn't be an issue because with the 8-minute headways, we could put on 100% eight-car trains. The problem is they get into the core, that's where the issue is. So, you know,
that's where the power upgrades
have to come. And again, we're progressing with those, with our program that we put forward.
And just one last question. I don't know what you're thinking on this is, but my hope would be this would be a separate public hearing from the bus matter.
So this is a major service plan change, so it triggers the requirement for the public participation plan. So the full public participation plan and Title VI analysis will be done separate from what's going on with respect to bus and others. I would also just add, Madam Chair, to Mr. Corcoran's last question. If the committee decides today to proceed with this plan to public comment, the next step will be a survey that goes out to the riders on Monday, and that survey specifically asks which of these factors is more important to you. Is it crowding? Is it getting a seat? Is it waiting on the platform? Is it the total trip time that it takes on your journey? It asks those questions very specifically. So it's not just a yes or no on this plan. It's really trying to better understand what matters most to our riders and how this plan would be responsive to it.
Thank you. I'm coming down the line. Okay, Ms. Porter.
I just thank you for saying that, because that was basically going to be my comment. I think this is an interesting proposal, and I would certainly support it going forward. I think we do need more information, including the information that Ms. Harley requested. my sense is that people don't really understand it yet. I think that I've heard some and read some public comments, some of which seem like they don't grasp what we're trying to do or what the impact would be. And so really, if people are going to give us responses to the questions that we have, they need to understand how this thing works. And I don't think we're there yet. So whatever we can do as part of our public participation plan to let people know what the impact of this is going to be, what it's going to feel like to them when they're on their commute. Anything that we could do, I think, is absolutely essential for us to get useful information back on this.
Mulder?
The question I had was asked by my colleague over here in terms of costs and expenses, so I'll wait that information, which I guess would be part of the public hearing process, I would hope. Would it be or wouldn't it be? Yeah. On expenses, revenue, et cetera. Thank you.
Thanks, and morning. Thanks for the presentation. I understand mostly the data and trying to solve a throughput problem as much as anything else. But my assumption is there's no mention of the red line. My assumption is that folks who commute in on the red line and transfer to these other lines, there will be impacts on their commute. I think it's important to be able to describe that if it's true, even in qualitative terms.
If I can, yes. I should have said that from service perspective, there's no change on the red line. It does impact customers that are transferring. Where they're transferring, there's usually a lot of service, so it's a minimal impact, but there is a small impact. Also did not mention that this is for rush periods only. There's no off-peak. There's no weekend changes that we're proposing for rush hour. I'm sorry about not clarifying that earlier.
Yes.
Thanks. So my question focuses on the process and kind of comparing an alternative to the base plan. And so I wonder why do we have ourselves advancing towards a situation where there's just two alternatives? That's not my experience with transportation policymaking, that you kind of have an all or nothing approach to things, and it seems that this board is repeatedly kind of placed in a decision making role to either do all or nothing. And you did it with the rail cars, and we went through that saga over the past year and a half. There were even from the very beginning with the rail car option, the management staff never presented a range of alternatives until the end. And so I wonder, are we doing that again here? Like, why do you have just one alternative that we're looking at? I mean, wouldn't it help us understand what's at stake and the trade-offs? And I think the trade-offs are beyond on-time performance and on-time performance and frequency. There's other things. I mean, I think we need to understand, the real maintenance implications. You know, like really inform us about what the maintenance implications are of various alternatives. Am I missing something here, or should we be looking at a 7-minute headway? Should we be looking at a different rush hour headways for different lines? I mean, wouldn't that help us fully understand what's at stake? Even if we get back to your recommendation, wouldn't it be helpful for us to explain to the public how all these different variables interact with each other? And then they can figure out for themselves, what's most valuable. My experience is the public is smart. We bring a range of alternatives forward with a whole host of transportation projects every day. You get incredible feedback from the public, but you've got to give them some context to understand what you're trying to do. And I just feel that there's this kind of habit of putting up the management proposal and then the kind of arguing about that, really not understanding what it's going to do, and then, you know, everyone is kind of left, you know, somewhat confused and frustrated by what our option is, because there's only one option. Is that a fair, you know, comment?
I think the Dorms Show is from a standpoint of the headways, how the headways work, and Jim can comment on this a little bit more detail, but in regards to how the headways work, because of the system design, there's very few opportunities to tweak individual lines, you know, like a 7-minute headway, or, you know, one at 6, one at 8. There's very few opportunities to be able to do that, because as you notice, like I said, we've got basically all the lines are you know, it's a big matrixed system through there. So from that standpoint, there is from that strict headway standpoint, there's not a whole range of options that are out there other than this one. We're going to, you know, significantly wider headways, and the current plan that we have put forward. Like I said, there were other options that were looked at that we discounted, things like skip stopping Roslyn to be able to make those, because it was just the staff's feeling that it wasn't worth putting that forward. Turnbacks at East Falls to be able to have platform transfers. Cross-platform transfers for the Silver Line to be able to get more trains through. There are options out there which, you know, we can go back and look at, providing fewer cars, like I said, from the maintenance implications on this. One of the things, you know, the amount of cars that we're putting out restricts our opportunity to do campaigns on cars. You know, being able to pull the 4Ks out of service for the period of time that we have had, has given us an opportunity to do significant campaigns on those to be able to reduce the door incidents on that. So there, again, you know, when we look at options for running, you know, maybe less 8-car trains, more 6-car trains, I mean, there is opportunity to be able to do that, those types of items. But in regards to the simple headways, we because of the way the system is designed, there's not a whole lot of options other than this one that's been put forward. And the current service plan.
Any other questions? Ms. Scobin.
Did you have a follow-up?
I'd like to get more detail on what you've discounted and why.
Sure.
You know, including the definition of rush hour. For particular lines. I mean, I just feel like the more information we have about what's a lever in this equation, the better.
Thank you. I think this is a good presentation from the staff. I think it's a good initiative that you brought forward to us to give us some options for right-sizing the system after a couple years. But I do want to align myself with Leif's suggestion of maybe before we get too far down into the public process, we at least see in writing some of the other things that you talked about, which are interesting ideas. At least we should understand what they were and why you rejected them. I just want to spend a few minutes on this chart and these numbers here, because I think these numbers are kind of key to this proposal, the passenger per car numbers. And I just want to understand where they come from. So do these passenger per car numbers come from a particular month in the last year, or do they represent a full year that's been then reduced to a monthly and then to a daily basis? Where exactly did the numbers come from?
We manually take counts every month, sometimes during the month at 9 different locations where they're done. The counts that we use for planning purposes are typically from May, September, and October. They're not summer months. They're not the winter months where we've got irregularities in service. And so there are not our highest, but a good representative of what our commuter services are.
So you've picked 3 months in the past, maybe a month from 2014 and maybe 2 months from 2015?
2 months from 2014 and one from 2015, but yes.
Okay. So it's that kind of a historic period. And then when you take the numbers and show passengers per car, Are you showing that for a particular hour? Because I notice you mark it peak hour, or is it an average for the rush hour period?
This is for the peak hour during the time period. So when we do the trains between Courthouse and Roslyn, maximum load point for those trains coming in, it's for that peak hour. How many trains went through there during that peak hour, how many people were on them, how many cars were on those trains, and then it's people divided by the number of cars.
So to summarize, it's peak hour during the peak period.
That's correct.
All right. Now, I noticed from the past data that we received that the system has peak days. Essentially, Wednesday seems to be the peak day. So does this reflect the peak day of the peak hour, or is it an average for a whole week for the 5 days of the basically work day work week?
Typically, what we try to do is we do counts during the month. We try to get a couple of counts at every location we do where there isn't an offload somewhere in the system or like that. But there, we do counts Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We don't do counts on Monday and Friday. We've done them, but on special occasions. So typical counts are done Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we get that typical ridership. It's not the low numbers are not average in there. It's our typical weekday ridership.
So it's your typical peak of the weekday.
Yeah, not including Monday, Friday.
Ridership. So this is sort of represents what you know. If you did this on Monday, you'd probably see those numbers come down, or Friday.
Absolutely.
They'd be come down. So you're gearing this to what is the kind of the peak of the peak of the peak.
It'd probably be 10% lower on a Friday and maybe 7-8% lower on Monday.
Right. And the base is the same both in the current requirement as well as the proposed. You haven't shown any growth or any change.
That's correct.
Okay. So that to the extent that the amount of system traffic changes, that really isn't reflected as yet in what is the proposed period. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I guess the final thing I just wanted to explore is, this is really for Mr. Troop, in the data set, and I don't know if it was on one of the charts, but in the data set provided, you're actually increasing the number of 8-car trains that will be on silver and orange in the proposed as opposed to the current. It goes up to 53%. Is that correct? And I'm assuming, but I'm looking for confirmation, that the existing power supply is sufficient to handle that increase to the 53%. You don't need the power upgrade to get to that point. But I assume there is at some point where you would max out the power so you couldn't increase more 8-car trains. Right, and that's what I'm getting at, because I do see there's high passenger per car numbers. And one way to reduce that would be to have more 8-car trains. It's picking up on Leif's question. Is this the max here, the 53%, so that you couldn't go to more 8-car trains?
Currently, that is the max. That's correct.
And that would be the max for the proposed period as well.
As again, we evaluate that as we continue with the work. We could evaluate that and see where we are with that. But as the work continues, you know, the expectation is that the power capacity would go up, so we would be able to evaluate that at appropriate levels at appropriate time.
Okay. Final question is timeline. Ms. Hines and Mr. Corcoran pointed out that whatever we're doing here would last until the Silver Line is completed the Dulles. But my question is, what's the timeline for this beginning? As you go through the public process, is this something that could begin January 2016, or is this something that you would expect would begin September 2016? When, if the board decides after public process and public hearing it wants to go this route, what's the timeline to implement or something different?
Yeah, the timeline to implement this would be, again, depending on public comment, but we would be looking at sometime in January.
So this could be done.
I'm sorry, sometime in January, early January.
January 2016. Yes. Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Let's go to Ms. Harley. And then from Ms. Hines.
Yeah. Just a follow-up question in regards to what my colleague was saying. Do these numbers reflect ridership on the lines in special events like the games? I mean, they're already crowded. So I'm just wondering how the regularity of games in the summer, games in the winter would affect the crowding issue. And is that going to be factored in the conversation?
The counts that we take are typical weekday ridership. Okay, so their average weekday ridership during our high ridership months. From special events, what we do is we send out extra trains. So when there's a national game, there's extra, we call them gap trains, but there's extra trains that are sent before an event and after event. They're not in this calculation. They would continue. Not a lot of them, in very, very few or little in the morning peak. There's sometimes a game in the afternoon peak from a baseball perspective. Most of those aren't off peaks and evenings, and we put extra service out for them. That extra service calculation is not included in here. We've got some numbers for you.
Let me just ask one other sort of follow-up question here that I got forwarded, which is, does this proposal have any positive or negative effect on how we're approaching some of the safety findings? I think you don't need to answer that right now in the same, unless you want to, but it's in the same vein as what Keturah raised about the financial and operating costs.
It certainly has no negative effect on the safety, and you know, from my standpoint, there really isn't a positive effect.
You think there is a positive effect?
It's, you know, just speaking intuitively, I don't think there's any significant positive effect to the safety on this. I mean, again, we can pull out cars for maintenance campaigns. This would be more of a state of good repair effect, which is translatable somewhat to safety. But it's the reality is this plan itself is relatively safety neutral.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the discussion. And just before we asked how we want to move forward, I think a clear statement as to why we are here today with it, because I think we brought this as part of the state of good operation. That is, just as we've done our buses, we've said, okay, are there some things that are happening out there that we could make adjustments to improve service under the same planned cost and operational environment that we have in the current budget? And so are we consistent on the train side as we are on the bus side? That is, that's why we're doing it here, not pulling it out as a campaign, but we're here with that.
If I can answer that, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think this is a time that's not in the budget process.
Right.
There may be some savings as a result of doing this, but that isn't the reason we're here. We're here to talk about the way the bus services run and the changes we can make to make it better. In this case, this is a discussion of reliability versus crowding. Everything, all the board members are right on target as to what the issues are. And it's we're asking for the opportunity to talk about it with you and to talk about it with the public and then do that assessment, come back to you, and then make the final decision.
And my last comment is that the clarity in our public participation plan is the problem that we're solving. And I think in stating that problem, we really need the customers to have a good understanding of the operational constraints of the system, what the system can do for us. We have a lot of perceptions that if we can add more, let's just add more. Well, adding more is not it, or reducing headways or increasing them. And so I think it's very right that your question also includes those two pieces that the customers can understand. Are you looking at tolerating more crowding or more waiting? And those are really challenges that we have there. And so I think it's going to be important that we have that kind of discussion, and we pose the question quite well for folks of what we're trying to solve.
Always remember, we don't need to make any changes with the bus,
right,
other than maybe the 5A or the rail service. We do not need to make a change.
This
is a discussion about trying to make improvements to the system
right.
In one form or another.
I think I'll now ask a question. Do we move forward to the public participation plan? Is there a motion to move forward? Is it the resolution to look at options, or is it the resolutions to the statement of the operation that we've gone through? That is, I think one of the question part of your question was, could there be more options out there? And I think one of the questions that was addressed by staff was the limit of operational capability that we have. And I think that's one of the key pieces that has to be on the table as understanding. Now, I think it would be difficult to go with, I'm not going to commit, maybe that's not my answer. And I'll let staff answer that question. The question is whether or not there could be multiple options out for consideration as we go to the public participation plan.
I think currently we don't see anything but this is an option. We can certainly put out there other options that we've discussed and discounted for the various reasons, why we did that. But again, the system constrains us to certain headways, certain abilities. The system's already built. We have what we have. Certainly we can provide information as to other options that we looked at, that we engaged in, that we talked about, and putting this forward as what we feel is the only reasonable option moving forward.
Okay. Ms. Porter, you were going to...
I was just going to suggest that we not put out the other options in a formal way, because if you say, okay, we're considering skipping Arlington, you're going to have a huge number of people who... And they won't be addressing anything that we're seriously considering, if I may say, from my opinion. And I would rather focus... I mean, I agree with your idea that in the process of educating the public, that you include some of the things like, these are things we have... talked about but are not considering, and then you make the list of those. But I really don't want to see us put those out as formal options, because we will generate a lot of comments on things that, I mean, I think that's sort of bait and switch. I don't think you want to put something out there just to make people mad when we don't think we're going to do it.
Ms. Hutchins, in theory, I don't have a problem with what you guys are saying. I think the issue is practical. And I think one of the tricky places we are right now is that you went to the RAC first, which I appreciate that you did. That generated a whole bunch of stories. And so people interpreted whatever you said in particular ways. And the only written information has been the proposal. And I actually believe that if we take the time to lay out, as Mrs. Hutchins and others have noted, the constraints of the system and why certain things are very, very difficult and may not generate any positive impact, that our public, as Leif and Mike have noted, they're smart and they will get that. I also do know that on occasion, in 20 years of doing public work, somebody comes up with something because they look at it with fresh eyes. And we don't want to close the door to that. And so perhaps the thing to do is to approve our resolution and concept and think through whether there's another resolve that can be added at the board meeting that basically talks about that we direct the staff to really lay out for the public, the constraints of the system, the ideas that were explored and discarded and why, and our openness to an idea which we might not have had, even as we authorize this particular proposal to be the focus of the conversation. So we open the door a little bit. We also really ask you to do some work that's more detailed than you might have thought. But I don't think, even the questions you're asking, Lynn, I don't think that if you just I think people have to understand that as they answer questions in a survey, that so much maintenance on cars has to be done, otherwise reliability goes down anyway. That we can't do 7-minute headways because this thing all has to mesh, and 7 doesn't allow 5 lines to mesh, or whatever the reasons are. I think you need to lay that all out for the public to see. policy. But that would be my suggestion. I think we need to put this out, but I think we need to leave the door open. And there's probably a way over the next 2 weeks that we can come up with language that would do that.
And this is not inconsistent what we do with bus service either.
Right.
That is, we put it out for the citizens to see that here's an opportunity for us to offer what we think is a better option for your service. And you get a chance to say you'll take it or you don't, and we get a chance to have a opine on it. But I do think the clarity, I do think the clarity of the problem that describes the constraints and a clarity of how you have gone through this analysis in order to get to this recommendation. And I think that is it. Does that, yes?
Yeah, if we can accomplish that by the board meeting, that would be terrific. You know, I think it's really important to put this in context. This board adopted a budget and then patted itself on the back for not having any service reductions. And then within a month, management is back in front of us. And if you look at the numbers that you have here, and just to simplify things, car count in current and then car count in proposed, that's a dramatic reduction. That's a dramatic reduction in service. So let's not talk out of two sides of our mouth. We have a high threshold to explain, you know, why we would even entertain this in terms of optimizing the system. And I think we need to do a better job of making sure the public understand the range of options and the inputs. I'm not saying don't do this, but we have a credibility gap here. We are routinely going out and saying one thing and then changing the story. Momentum is an example. We got to do momentum. Guess what? You're not ready to do momentum. You know, we're safe. No, we're not. We got to do the rail car options to expand. Uh-oh, no, we don't. So this board has got to do a better job of holding management accountable so that we're talking out of one side of our mouth. And that's my concern here. And so if you guys want to just keep telling me there's no other way to do it, I've heard that before from you. So I, as a board member, and I hope my colleagues will expect that we're going to get more information, we're going to get more alternatives, and we're going to engage the public more. That's the way things, I think, need to be.
And we're going to do that. And again, this is not in the intent to make this a budget action or change the commitment that the board and the staff has made to the public. It's a way of, again, primarily looking at reliability and overcrowding and the benefits and the disadvantages of those activities, which is the discussion that we want to have.
Thank you. I'm going to call a question on the item. All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? No. Okay. So, and I will include in the approved motion that we will bring the clarity as has been asked at the table as part of the resolution when we come back. The next item, before we begin, I want to read the following into the record, and it is a statement, a declaration from Mr. Mike Goldman, and it reads, I would like to make a declaration to resolve the reappearance of a conflict of interest in accordance with the board's code of ethics. I'm disclosing that I had a conversation with an Accenture representative in January of this year regarding the new electronic payment program NEP and an informational briefing with Cubic last week regarding NEP proposals. In both cases, at the company's request, both meetings were held at my law office. I met with Accenture representative for 30 minutes and asked if I had concerns about the talent. I indicated that it was moving slowly and it did not have big enough sample. Last week, I met with two representatives from Cubic who indicated that WMATA had requested proposals on NEP. They described their proposals to be and followed up by sending copies of the proposals to me and WMATA. I have since been advised by Chief Procurement Officer through the Board Corporate Secretary that Cubic documents are unsolicited proposals. I'm still able to fairly and objectively participate in the NEP matters that come before the Board because I receive no benefit from either company and based on these meetings, I have developed no view as to the merits of the position of either company, and I am doing that on behalf of Mr. Goldman for a statement with no judgment. And now I will ask the staff to move forward with the presentation of the next item. And Mr. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be here.
Madam Chair, I need to understand this in the code, in the context of our code of ethics. If I might, has the ethics committee reviewed this? Has our ethics officer reviewed this?
The ethics officer
reviewed it.
And you all are fine with this. So if anyone from a vendor or someone we have a contract with, it's okay for us to have these conversations?
Absolutely not, by my judgment.
And
I'm going to make a statement to your question you raised. The answer is no for me.
I truly, this is a concern that I have. We have had the Code of Ethics on hold for months here because folks will not identify what the issues are that need to be addressed in it. And now we have a declaration about contractors and potential bidders and unsolicited proposals being given to a board member as the first. I'm stunned. I'm totally stunned. And
I just want to respond to this point. When I had the first contact with the Accenture representative, I asked the ethics counsel whether I'm permitted, limited to doing that. He advised that, well, since there's no procurement before the board on this matter at the present time, you can have and entertain such a meeting with this person, but you may have to make a declaration at some point in the future. I'm making that declaration now. I'm making it now because subsequently, you know, I was asked by a representative of Cubic if they could make a presentation to me. I didn't know what their presentation was going to be like, but I figured if I was doing for one, I should do with the other, and I would make a declaration. I'm making that declaration. There's apparently still no procurement matter, but the advice of ethics counsel is because there's an informational briefing that we're about to receive, I should make my declaration at this point in time and on this day. So I've done so.
Thank you.
original program goals, we're moving ahead on these. In addition to the use of a regionally branded fare card, which will be much easier to acquire in thousands of additional retail stores, customers will be able to use other payment forms that they find convenient, such as contactless bank cards, mobile phone, or even possibly their bike share fob that they can use for the dual purpose. The system is flexible, so these payment choices can expand as the technology expands. An example of new choices is that the instance of Apple Pay feature provided in the latest iPhone, which did not exist when the program was initiated some 4 years ago, did not even exist when the pilot phase was begun 18 months ago, but Apple Pay was tested during the pilot. And so that's the flexibility that we're achieving through the direction of the payment system. For bus rapid by customers on commuter rails as well. Other again, on the benefits of the comprehensive program, and we've discussed some times before, many additional locations for the retail networks will be provided. The ability to purchase fares will be expanded and made as simple as the 7-Eleven. Of course, devices, fare-based bus readers, vendors will be in the room, will be replaced. And now, account update, a value purchase via the web or mobile site will be available to the customer just within minutes rather than a day or two for the current system. On the next page, it shows some foresight that just recently, in 2015, the Transportation Research Board came out with a report on the future of fare systems. This is an organization that works through the National Academy of Sciences just across the street. And the report really ended up being a checklist for our NEP opportunity here, as it was understood some years ago. Unified payment strategy, account-based systems, open payments for customers, and industry standards to drive competition amongst devices, et cetera. Encourage people to look at that, because it must be gratifying to those that had developed the system some time ago. I know important to our board is the regional role of assumptions, and we had some adjustments to that during the course of the effort. So as it stands now, and we've been working hard on this in the last weeks, WMATA will be the liaison for all the regional partners for NEP applications, working closely with Accenture and the regional partners to bring the appropriate concepts and methods and implementation to them. Essentially, taking care of the software, implementation, coordinating testing to drive efficiencies, while allowing the regional providers to purchase those devices that are needed and desired specifically for their operations. So that's our commitment, and we've had several meetings. Gone well. We have another one on Friday, and I'm hearing very positive responses. I hope you can share your responses as well. So, to the pilot program, the overview. The purpose was to evaluate next-generation technology in the WMATA, the regional environment, also gather customer feedback, identify changes, behaviors, etc. So we put hardware in the field for rail, bus, and parking, which I'll get to, and we received feedback, likes, dislikes. We evaluated the technical concepts and the data, and we are continuing to do that now. Just some visuals for on the next page is a fare gate installation we've showed people before, and customers commented on all these aspects. Even the customers that did participate, they'd like to see their account balance at the gate. The color of the visual indicator should vary when an account balance is low to provide more information. The next page shows the typical bus installations, and these devices in transition will operate alongside the current system in parallel. For these devices, customers noted the sounds could be adjusted, and again, a message on account balance would be helpful, but generally positive responses. The parking installation, as you know, has not proceeded as we would have liked.
two parking lots are included in the equipment. The devices are out there. They're installed in the last weeks, but we still await software upgrades from the contractor to begin that testing. We have no current start date established for that testing. Go through the principal pilot criteria. Now, these will be mainly technical criteria to operate the system for a 90-day duration without fail, continuous operation, to adhere to and comply with all the latest security standards, PCIs, payment card industry that establishes standards which card merchants, which we are, need to adhere to, and test the equipment, rail, fare gates, bus payment targets, and parking exit lanes. And we proceeded to do that, except for the parking, which the equipment, as you know, has just been installed. Part of that technical testing was assuring fast customer flow and payment transaction times. In the fare gates, we measured the throughput of customers using the various fare media in a mix, and it went well. 45-plus passengers could make it through the gate. Just really the time factor there is on how fast people can move. And the bus fare payments move quickly via the cellular network. This is a transaction that is starts on the bus, goes through the cellular network, back to the central data system, and travels back to the bus very quickly, as fast as the system operates today to validate that transaction. We demanded a high accuracy and reliability for payment data, transactions, and we measured those against our accuracy standards as well. We accepted and needed planned on processing various fare media types, including the bank cards, relative bank cards, NFC phones, and the standard fare media, a NEP card, as we were calling it, for testing. And we tested those, and as I mentioned, the Apple Pay came into play, or came into existence as we started the pilot. And then another software went away, soft card went away. So the system did demonstrate flexibility. Generally, the timing and accuracy of these payment methods was good. In the future, we hope to see some improvements in the speed of reading some of these media, and that's mostly dependent on the media versus the system. So we're working with the providers of those types of media to get them more what we call transit ready, if you will. The transaction volume, there were about 30,000 transactions on the rail and over 30,000 transactions on the bus, about 500,000, over 500,000 on the rail. And those met our standards. The transaction volume was required to be at least 1,000 transactions for each of the fare media types. Customer patrons accounted for about 8% of the transactions, about 44,000 out of that total. We received good customer feedback, comments and suggestions on the pilot, and some of them are captured here. We had many, many comments from those participants, and approximately almost 90% said this was the right direction for the region to move. We brought up a cost summary because we wanted to bring this up relative to what was initially provided earlier. And just before I arrived at the WMATA, the numbers compiled for the project did not include some items that are now reflected. These items include infrastructure improvements, such as network communications and power upgrades at rail stations, other equipment and material costs, and some indirect overhead costs as well. And you'll see the variance down there as well. The costs were actually identified in the FY 2015 budget, which was approved in May of 2014. With the stated total project to be $292 million at that time. Current costs have been planned for some time, but I understand this hasn't been communicated well in other board material. And I want to say we continue to develop the working model for these costs and assessments, and so we can model, monitor, and report back collection costs and benefits of the NIP consistently and measured and reported over a period of time, and identify opportunities for improvement. As I noted, we've been working with the regional providers as well as the advisory committees who have been very supportive in briefings, discussions, and actual participation by some of their members as well we have ongoing meetings and briefings and find them very productive, and I heard good response from those committees as well. Take a minute to talk about transition planning, which will be such an important factor. We'll add NEP targets, taking the new fare media, at all the legacy bus, rail, and parking devices to maintain passenger throughput. We'll expand the retail environment to provide access to a much larger population, and we'll stage the introduction to manage this expansion. We understand that no transition will, I won't characterize it as easy for customers, changing a pattern that they've been grown accustomed to over all these years, but we'll work hard. We have a significant communications effort planned to identify and address customer communication needs and inform them of the changes and the timing of those things. So some more specifics on the transition planning as far as the legacy rail gates, metro bus parking, and overall the retail network. And we're working closely with the regional partners in the planning of the timing of this implementation as well. Plan to equip the legacy gates and include transition plans for customers to transition their accounts via web, phone, and other methods too that we're still in development of. Working closely, this timing is important to the regional partners because they will be following and developing their plan shortly, and their customers will be expecting the same type of opportunities, of course, as well. So the next steps, we're not complete. The next steps are to complete our pilot phase analysis and parking testing and continue planning and design for the next phase of deployment. We continue to work very closely with the contractor to complete this analysis of pilot results, but have not resolved all the issues at this time. We're working hard to move forward, and we'll ensure that the regional interests are protected as we go forward in this process, too. The last slide as I have is the existing timeline. It's generally the same, and we're in the process of more detailed planning to get to the specific dates, and we expect that to be finalized very soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Randall. Just a question. You showed the regional piece. Have you had any concerns raised by the regional partners other than you saying that you've met and they've worked, that you've had to work through?
The nature of the discussions so far, Madam Chair, have been defining their technical needs relative to the WMATA technical needs. They might be just the same or they might be different, and it's important to identify any of those differences because those will be a solution that will have to be a little bit modified from the WMATA solution, and that's gone pretty good. We had an outstanding discussion with the IT support group. The regional providers had questions on PCI compliance and credit card transactions, and those things went really very well. We have heard concerns about getting the work done in time for their budget cycles, of course, and we're working hard to provide some order of magnitudes and enough detail so they can go back to all their boards and understand the funding enough to request funding within the timeline that they require as well. Those have been the primary concerns, and I will say, along with the rest of it, working closely on an integration plan, and they are holding us, of course, to a high standard. We make commitments, and they certainly will say, well, we'll believe it when we see it. So we're out there every week trying to fulfill those commitments.
Mm-hmm. And I would simply be very specific about the Northern Virginia VRE system, and they introduced what was their similar plan. Does that relationship in terms of their system include all of that information you would need in order to ensure that it would be a seamless piece with them?
Madam Chair, we spoke to VRE some time ago, and they've been involved, I understand, in the technical discussions, but I'll have to get back to you on the specifics of that. Certainly the system we're proposing is able to integrate with other providers of, I'll call them, front end or those other services like a city bike share or something else, but the specifics I would have to advise on too because I haven't been in that specific discussion.
Mr. Costa.
Thank you for the presentation. To both the next steps and the timetable, can you tell me when the next couple of decision milestones are. I don't really understand that. And the reason why I ask is that we're showing a net present value that's gone from positive to negative. Mm-hmm. So it'd be good to understand when the next decision is to whether to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Costa. Yes, we're in discussions now, and it looks like next, doesn't look like, we're proceeding to finalize this criteria, happened within the week for a pilot determination. And I think probably the rest of that discussion, we have some time reserved after this meeting to go through.
Well, just one follow-up. The criteria at this point look like they're associated with whether the system works, which those are, that's good criterion. But it's also, it'd be interesting to understand whether we're testing savings or speed, some of the outcome metrics associated with pilot, because you mentioned a couple, but I didn't really see that they're formally described as metrics associated with the pilot.
Thank you. If I understand your question, asking the system work, process transactions, those types of things, did it work fast enough that we would expect it to be meet our expectations as passenger throughput, those types of things?
Yeah, I'm trying to connect those metrics with actual savings, I mean, so that we have a clear line of vision from the success of a pilot to ultimately the initiative's net present value.
Okay, that I understand that question. The net present value went into a number of things. Savings will be accounted for by maintenance costs, warranty, easier to maintain the central systems, those types of things. The savings on the customer sides will account for less card distribution from WMATA, and we're still measuring those items, and we're still clarifying what the future state will be on those items. I'd point out that, yes, we wanted to be as conservative as possible when we updated that net present value term. So we did that. We adjusted based on the prior model and are looking forward to developing a new model. Would say with any of these types of investments, getting a strong financial payback from these types of services is one thing. There are opportunities that haven't been accounted for in the model, say maintaining or enhancing ridership numbers and revenue numbers for new fare products and those types of things. And other types of benefits just by we get by operating a new system that we can manage better. So we still have work to do there.
Thanks. So the next milestone would be at the end of the pilot after criteria are developed.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Giancola.
Thank you for the report. I'm looking at the cost summary package, and I'm thinking back of when we first embarked on this effort, and the primary goal at that point, and it's noted earlier in the presentation, that we wanted to improve the ability of our customers to access our system in a modern, new technology way, allowing them through an open fare card type system to process it. So, you know, we were looking at customer service as one of the prime things, but there was a secondary factor is that we'd be saving some money. Now, clearly, you're showing that in the case of the capital costs, we're now in a negative present value, although it doesn't really talk about operational costs. Because, I mean, part of the issue was we do away with the ability to have to provide an accounting staff to take the money and process it. The credit card companies and other banks would be doing that, and we'd be saving money to some degree. I mean, the question is, I see capital costs here. Certainly ours are going up, not Accenture's, which, you know, we need to kind of talk about that a little bit, you know, where ours are going up, at least from your description. But also, to some degree, we really need to look at long-term operating costs and whether it's going to impact on our operations. So if you have a future report, I'd like to see some of those items in there, unless you want to talk about them now. But clearly, you know, I'm a little concerned that our capital costs are going up in the tune of $44 million, whereas Accenture's are not. And so can you talk about that a little bit and also the operational costs?
Yes, thank you. I'll take the operational costs first.
Can you speak up? I think thank you.
Oh, speak into the mic.
In and out.
Thank you very much.
In and out.
Yes, speaking to the operational aspects first, and that's that benefits analysis continues as we understand what the future state will be with the MEP programs. We're conducting, we have a team conducting interviews with participants throughout the company that will be affected by MEP. What's your current state, what's your future state, and what do you see your operations being? The card distribution goes along with that as far as other areas as well. And that's where I would, and that's what I wanted to say, is that we are developing a model that we will have our costs of fare collection operating costs, and we can monitor and report those and advise the expectations that we see from the system and the actual results from those systems periodically. So that's one of the points that we want to do, is bring that back to the information back to the committee, to the board as well, on a regular basis and in a consistent manner as well.
Okay, so we find out today that we're $44.5 million over. This is news to me. How do we go over by $44.5 million on a pilot? And then I have other questions. What is that made up of? Are we saving money by not being in the banking business in this pilot? Or how do you get over by $44.5 million?
Thank you. The amounts listed there are for the total project cost, so that would be over. Total everything for the period 2011 through 2022. Those would be the total costs for that period.
I don't understand. So you see, so from 2013 to 2022, is that? Am I reading this thing right? 2011 to 2022.
2011 to 2022 is the period of the budget here. So those
for the pilot or for the whole shebang?
That's for the entire deployment of the NEP system. Yes, not just the pilot.
This is full deployment, all out, not pilot.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So the board, you're telling us we're all in and we're still in a pilot. I don't get it. Back to Tony's question, if the pilot results are before the board, then we say go, no go, or are we already bought all the way, we bought the ranch here already? So why do we do a pilot for then,
right,
if we're buying the whole ranch?
We haven't made a decision on the pilot status yet. Was some of our discussion.
Will the board be able to make a decision as to go, no go after the pilot is completed? Or are we all the way in here?
Let me try to answer. There's a process that the pilot has to be complete.
I understand.
And it's not complete.
I understand.
So there's a decision to be made at that point in time as to whether we're to proceed or not to proceed. So there are things that we need to be working with our contractor to clarify. We have to make sure that the parking system is going to work, the technology is working, and all of the other systems that we talked about in 2011. As Mr. Giancola mentioned, and as you mentioned, I think there was an anticipation that we were going to get out of the banking business, that the credit cards were going to take over. There's a Visa, MasterCard, and all the others were going to be handling the money, and everybody was going to be using their own card with a chip in it or a telephone that had the process. That isn't, that transition capability exists within the proposed system, but the reality is 90% of our people are still going to be using a card that we issue, and we would still be the banker.
Oh.
So this anticipation that Smart Trip banking would go away and NEP would be handled by outside vendors is not the current case.
I didn't realize that.
And the open architecture, the advantages of that allows that those types of transitions with new targets to take place, but that isn't happening at the pace that was projected in 2011. So we have to address that, and some of the savings I think that we may have anticipated from an operational standpoint may not come about as a result of that transition slowing. So we have to take all of that into consideration as we evaluate the current pilot process that we have with Accenture, and before we make the final decision as whether to proceed with this project.
Okay, so following. So will the board be given the options of go, no go on the pilot when the pilot's finished? Will that be coming before this committee?
I do not believe contractually that it's a responsibility to come back to the board, but I think we certainly want to discuss with the board the findings as a result of when we complete this process.
Well, I would just say that the board should be asked to make a decision as to, on this pilot, given all the information that you're telling us, given the cost has gone up by $44.5 million. And given the fact that you said, Jack, that our customers are still going to use their smart benefit card, and transitioning to iPhones and so forth is not happening as fast as we thought, and all those things should be put before the board as to whether or not we should continue to do this pilot, continue to do this program. So I move, Madam Chairman, that we ask the management to come back on no-go on when they're finished with the pilot.
Mr. Folger, you've asked for an item for discussion for the committee. It may be a more appropriate item that we have at a different point. I think we'll have an opportunity to do so. Is there another question? Yes, Mr. Goldman.
Mr. Randall, good to see you again. The last time we talked, I expressed a great deal of dissatisfaction with the pace of the pilot. You had tried to get 3,000 people, and you ended up with only 400. And I just want to make sure that's still the case. The pilot hasn't been reopened. The pilot is what happened, and it's closed at this point as far as you're concerned.
Those numbers are still the same, correct.
And as I recall from the last time, and I think you repeated it here, the use of the new technology, credit cards with chips and the smartphones, that was not done by consumers and riders during the pilot. That was done by, well, not employees, members of the team.
Testing team, correct.
All right. And now you mentioned today Apple Pay that came along somewhere while the pilot was underway. Did a consumer ever use Apple Pay during the pilot? So who validated the use of Apple Pay that it works?
The testing team again.
The testing team again. So it's never been done with a consumer. And you still got the problem with the parking, which has never been tested.
That parking testing hasn't started, correct?
And now in your slides, as I understood the slides, what you're saying is that we're going to go to a transition system where we're going to have two targets on the existing fare gates. Is that how I should understand the slide in the presentation?
Yes.
And one target will be the existing Smart Trip target, and we suggest yes. And the other target will be the NEEP target.
Okay.
And will smartphones and Apple Pay and cards with chips work on the Smart Trip target?
No, they'll work on the NEEP target that's installed now.
And will the Smart Trip card work on the NIP target?
No. The existing Smart Trip card? No, it won't work on the new target.
So what happens when a rider with a Smart Trip card comes up to the fare gate and hits the NIP target?
It will get a fail message.
You get a sound, a noise?
A sound, a light, that, and the gate will not open. Right. Or the bus.
I assume the same thing happens if a rider, consumer with Apple Pay, tries to hit the Smart Trip target. He'll get a noise and...
Right, no transaction will occur.
Okay, and when do you plan to resume the pilot so you'll know whether the system works efficiently, having two targets that work for some riders but targets that don't work for other riders, so you'll know what the efficiency of the system is, having a two-target system? When do you plan to reopen the pilot to do that?
I'm not sure I understand regarding the efficiency for the customers. If you didn't.
Well, you did one pilot which was just had one target with NEEP, whatever that meant at that point in time. Now you're saying that in actual implementation, you're going to have fare gates that will have two targets. So people are going to have to make a choice between which target they use. And I'm asking when you're going to reopen the pilot to test that variation or that modification of the test system.
Maybe I should clarify, wasn't clear on that. The dual targets on the existing gates will be in place during the transition to all new gates and all NEP targets, the new gates, but providing customers so they don't have to choose a gate, which one to go through, whichever media, whichever position they're in for in their transition phase or cycle or timeline, they'll be able to still go through any gate as we add the new NEP gates to the arrays based on adoption of the and transition to the new NEP system by customers, which we'll monitor very closely.
But during the transition, there will be two targets
on the legacy gates, the transition period.
During the transition.
Right.
And how long is the transition? 6 months? A year?
Still being determined around a lot of factors,
so
right.
It could be a long period of time. It could be 2 years, 3 years?
No. We'll transition as fast as we can. We are modeling a lot of communication programs, and we'll be putting a lot of effort and a lot of incentives for people to move on to the new system as quickly as possible.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, in your slides, you show a fare gate installation, and you showed where the NEEP target is on the Gallery Place Chinatown Station.
Right.
Call that one.
Mm-hmm.
And just taking that as a model, it's right in the back of you.
Okay.
Where will the two targets be? Since you're going to have two targets now, where are the two targets going to be?
Okay.
One on top of the other, one on the side, one in back of the other?
Thank you. These are the new gates, so the new gates will only have the one target for the new system.
Okay. Well,
the
let's
brown
pretend that's an old gate.
Sure.
Okay. Where will the two targets be?
We haven't final don't have a final design, but by that time that we implement the paper fare cards will no longer be used, so we anticipate that could be a potential location where the slot is for the magnetic fare cards today.
Do you have a timeline as to when that decision will be made?
That's part of our project planning, but we're in development of that now.
Okay. You had a slide which another board member talked about, the $109 million of Wabana costs.
Yes.
And I think you mentioned that that was already budgeted or included in a budget. I just want to understand whether that's correct, that money has already been approved in a budget and unspent, or whether it still needs to come before the board in a budget for the next year to be approved,
right.
That $109 million.
In the 2015 budget, the applicable years were approved during that budget. It was the mention in the memo was $292 million was total project cost, but some of those costs fell out of that specific budget period. So that was in that budget year.
So those were capital costs that were approved in the FY15 budget year?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just being held and unspent at this point in time?
The project in total has spent, and previously approvals, there's about, we'll end this fiscal year with about $20 million, and that goes back to 2011, spent on the NEP, and that excludes any pilot payment for those kind of things. Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to understand, the installation of these targets, mm-hmm. is that something that still has to be budgeted, or is that included in the $109, $110 million?
That's included in our current estimates, that'll be covered out of this current budget.
$109,
$110 million. I'll clarify, part of that will be from our contractor, so part of it could be, is in that $184
million. Well, that's what I'm trying to understand, because you showed a piece of money that was attributed to the contractor, Accenture.
Mm-hmm.
So is Accenture going to pay to install the new fare gates?
Installation of the new fare gates are included in the contractor's total price of $184 million. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Installation of the new fare gates, that's included in the contractor's work, right? Mm-hmm.
So, Wabana doesn't pick up any of those costs.
Correct. That's part of the contract. They install
the
gates.
Just go back. So the installation of the targets, on the existing fare gates for the transitional period. Who pays for that?
It's still to be determined. We pay for that. It could be on either side of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to summarize by stating that my concern is our riders, our consumers, have enough concerns with the metro system now. They have concerns with safety. They have concerns with the reliability. They have concerns, as people on the Red Line experienced yesterday, where the Bethesda station was shut down for a couple hours because of an elevator problem. And so the train skipped the Bethesda station for 2 and 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. My concern here is that I don't want our riders, our consumers, to find another problem comes from this going to this new system where they essentially use one media and a noise goes off. And they don't know what to do with it, and then people back up trying to get through the fare gates. That's an additional burden I don't think riders need right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the New York subway system seems to run very well with a old line system like our fare cards where you just stick a little paper card through and you go. That seems to work very well. On the other hand, the London Underground and Chicago seemingly have figured out how this new technology works mm-hmm. with a new system, and apparently that seems to work very well. We seem to be somehow groping in between to develop a unique metro system.
Mr. Doman, I know you have you've obviously had a lot of concerns. I think the board has arrived at this system, and if there are some other concerns that we want to go back and look at it, I think that's appropriate. But I think your time has rambled on.
Mr. confidence in this.
I can understand that, and I don't have any.
Until there's a more vigorous pilot, I couldn't support.
I don't have any qualms about that. I have qualms about where the questions would come. Mr. Rickler.
I have the same concerns Mr. Goldman does. I mean, we do not want to make the customer experience worse. We want to improve it and at least make it as equal to what we have now. And the transition, to me, is one of the key things that we've got to work out before we proceed with this project. There's other issues that we'll talk about later that are of issues to us. The transition for the customer, I believe, you know, I'm with you 100%, is that we've got to make sure it's smooth and it's not confusing. We've had situations before. We've tried to have two separate sets of gates when we instituted Smart Trip, and it did not work. And we have to make sure that we have a transition plan that meets the needs of the customer, and we're not there yet.
Mr. Giancola had his hand up earlier, and on the time, and then Mr. Dan.
Yeah, I just had two follow-up to my earlier comment, and actually I wanted the general manager to clarify his statement. You said 90% of our customers will still be using our own issued card. Is that what you're saying? Was that a correct percentage?
I think it's 80 to 90%.
That's reasonable based on the adoption rates elsewhere today.
So
we don't know where those adoption rates will be.
So that's not certainly what our intent was when
that
we
was
started this
intent.
Whole program.
No,
90%.
No.
And secondly, the question is on the contract we have with Accenture. I think we need to get a briefing on what that entails and from the contract manager or COTAR exactly what options we have to ultimately eventually cancel the contract if we feel it's not adequate. So, I mean, we need to know whether we have that capability or not. So in a future briefing, we need to hear that. And secondly, or thirdly, fare gates themselves, I thought that was going to be done under a separate contract, but not through Accenture. So Accenture has that piece too?
That's correct.
Okay.
You are going to get the briefing on the second item.
So I do, Mr. Requa, the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission did send a series of questions to you. It would be very helpful for us all, I think, to get the answers to those questions
sure.
prior to the any timing on whether we're
right.
moving forward or not. and I would just say for my colleagues from other jurisdictions, these really do focus on the integration issue with our local services, which this board has always viewed as needed to be seamless and needed to be understood. And while we're looking at these costs here that we're all going to share, we can't lose sight of the fact that local jurisdictions are going to have to layer in an additional set of costs that right now has created a tremendous amount of anxiety in our local budgets and in our local departments. The other thing I would ask is for a detailed accounting of the change in the WMATA cost. from 2013 to what you're showing us today, so that we can really understand. I understood from your overview, Tom, that some of this is things which weren't anticipated or things which were thought to be covered in other places. All of that's to the good. But I would agree with my colleagues. We were actually told that this was going to have a positive effect overall on the budget, and it sure isn't looking like that right now. And so I would really like to understand how come WMATA's costs have gone up so dramatically. Thank you.
Provide that.
Mr. Dowd.
Further, with respect to cost exposure, as I read this table, what it tells me is we know that WMATA's costs have gone up. If I read the footnote with respect to Accenture, we really don't know what their costs will be until this project moves forward.
Madam Chair, committee members, I put we designated that. There always could be modifications, increases, but there that is a number that we placed in the award budget, which was the maximum based on the equipment choices and volumes that we had at that time. So there's trying to be a reference that it could go down as well as up based on some of the features or equipment choices that we do make as well. And that's it's a variable.
Going down is unlikely. Going up is unlikely.
Going down never happens.
Okay. Thank you very much for the discussion. I think that we have been bringing these back on a quarterly, and I think it's probably an opportunity to come back on a more frequent basis and answer some of the very specific questions that have been asked today, and, because I think they really are those that are up for concern. I think when we go back and look at this, and we start by saying, why did we take this project on? Mm-hmm. And there were some assumptions that were there that I think we should recognize are not going to be built in this project. One of the biggest ones that we talked about was the unbanked. And the largest ridership in the WMATA system, or huge ridership of the WMATA system, is the unbanked. So there is a piece that was very much discussed in terms of how we would solve that problem. And I think it still should be a part of the solution, but I think we should not be...
Madam Chair, if I could comment just briefly, we have started a survey regarding the bus riders, and we talked about the cash loading, that type of thing. And it's not been fully developed yet, but it will be shortly, I think, in the month of July. Some initial reactions were the over half of the bus population that we surveyed said they weren't really interested in using their phone or their bank card or an account. But almost 40% said if you had more retail locations, if the region had more retail locations, they would ride more often as well. So there's some understandings there that we're going to pull out of that information and follow up on that will help us frame the solution overall. But we haven't at all forgotten those customers are key to us, and we're putting a lot of effort to have the solution fit their needs as well.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, that is the end of this committee agenda, and the items we will move forward on it have been approved. I do have a correction here on the bus service, rail service one. I think we want to simply have on record who made the motion, and it needs to be a member of the committee.
It was the bus service.
No, we didn't have a move in a second.
Yes,
on the rail.
On the rail.
So we need a move in a second.
Yes, okay.
I thought there was a move in a second before we began the discussion.
Thank you. That's all I need. In a second. Thank you. All those in favor? It's the same. Okay. On the record. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, could I ask a procedural question here? There is on the agenda an executive session of this committee, and I'm just asking, do you want to go to that and come back to finance, or do finance and then have the executive session?
We have two.
No, there's just one. The other is, after finance, we have an executive committee with the RAC.
Okay. Finance, I think.
So that's move to finance now? Okay. Everybody comfortable with that? Thank you. In the absence of the chairman and the vice chair of the finance committee, I will chair finance.